Better on Draft podcast is recorded live in Detroit Sound Studios in Royal Oak, Michigan.
Now, pop that 40 and kick back with your hosts, Dan, Nick, Ken, Rob, and Matt.
We are live with the Better on Draft podcast, episode number 51. Matt is too busy trying to open up a waxed bottle.
Not sure what's going on over here.
It makes two of us. It's my first time.
If you just tried to open it with a bottle opener, it would open. It really would.
I'm trying to make a molehill out of a mountain here, though.
That's okay, though. So anyways, my name is Ken. I am your host. I'm going to start off with myself while everyone else is working on
drinking
that.
Drinking a big bottle. What's going on over here,
I am drinking
here,
a big
sir?
Bottle from the bottle, because every glass is a glass as long as you know how to drink from it.
That's true.
This is a, it looks like it's only like a 25 ounce. It's just very
Flemish.
So you only got
Flemish,
one,
yeah.
You only got one more ounce than I do over here. All right.
Exactly.
He's drinking America.
So this is a Steen Bruges Double Brown Ale. Brewed in Belgium, so you know it was brewed in Belgium because it said it on the bottle.
Wow.
Actually, a really good beer. I already had a pawpaw beer, though. That was delicious. Their oatmeal stout.
Hanging on it's Belgium because it was brewed in Belgium.
Because it says brewed in Belgium on here. That's how I know it's
that's
duh. I mean, that's how you know that all foreign beers are brewed. You know, let's like Blue Moon. You know, that's built Belgian, isn't it?
It's a Belgian way.
Do they say that?
Belgian no, they don't.
Like, well, Akifio did get a doctorate of brewology in Brussels. So, I mean, it's a Belgian-inspired wit.
In Canada, it is called Belgian Moon, though it's brewed in Canada.
I try to stay out of Canada as much as I can because
This because you know how we used to go to Caesars and they had Rickard's White over there?
Yeah.
Well, they got rid of Rickard's White and put on Belgian Moon, which is
Blue
Moon.
Oh, that's annoying. I'd be so bad because I would be like, oh, I want that, and then I'd figure out what it was
like, yeah, you're like, oh, Belgian Moon, that sounds fun.
$8 Canadian on this and I'd be really upset.
Yeah, that's pretty much how it goes, but I'd still drink it because I would say I'm decent at Pai Gow, but there's no such thing as being decent at Pai Gow as much as just,
oh no, there is. I learned that this last weekend watching some other people.
Oh, like, really?
There is very much being decent at Pai Gow. That's a whole other show.
We're not gonna go too deep. We're gonna have to talk about that during the break. But what are you drinking, Dan?
Oh, I'm back to my normal. It has been a while, but I've got the Newcastle, a good Dutch beer.
Good Dutch
days,
beer.
And a PBR.
Nice.
Yeah.
And
are you done yet?
I'm going to hand this to Dan because I'm still having problems.
All right.
I've got myself a Warsteiner Oktoberfest.
Warsteiner.
Yeah, it's a... How does true Deutsch pronounce it? Warsteiner?
Are you speaking
German.
Deutsch?
Der König unter der Bären. Yeah, so the original king of beers. So, Prost.
Prost.
Trying to get ready for Oktoberfest tomorrow.
You're getting ready for Oktoberfest at Rochester Mills tomorrow?
So excited. Actually, that's the...
This is on pretty tight. I'm really impressed.
The saying of Warsteiner is the king of beers, but it's auf Deutsch, so in German, so it's Der König unter der Bären. So, yeah, they might have had it first before a certain...
Doesn't matter. It's
Belgian, Flemish,
Brazilian. Two different languages, sir.
South American, European...
Global conglomerate.
Yeah.
There we go.
Basically.
But yeah, 5.9% alcohol, very festive with the blue and white stripes, or the checks rather, and trying to get ready up for tomorrow. Oh, look, finally Dan got it.
There we go. So
Dan,
we're talking about...
liberated the front of this bottle.
It took a little work. He is truthful on that.
For those of you who are listening to the show, going to like the Port Huron Beer Fest tomorrow or anything like that, we are... talking about Oktoberfest at Rochester Mills. It's tonight to right now, obviously, as well as tomorrow night over in Rochester Mills at the brewery itself. Definitely check it out if you've never been there before. I actually have been there before, and it's a great time. I saw my fourth grade teacher, who was now a bike cop, and I was hammered. So that was a very interesting conversation to have with a teacher who recognized you while you are drunk, and he is now a cop.
And they pulled you over?
No. He was working the door. I think he does it as like a post-retirement, you know, does a few things. He used to work in the Rochester Hills Police Department before becoming a teacher and then went back. So quite the interesting conversation, to say the least. He saw my sister and I were there one of the rare times, and my sister
Thank
had
you.
Him too.
Sorry,
really
I had to
strong.
Figure out where that smell was coming from and rip it out of the wall.
As soon as you walk in the door, it hits you.
That
like
Glade plug-in is doing work on my nose
it
right now.
Hits you like a brick.
So we got two guests in the area. We've got Rich and Tom from Schoolcraft College. So,
a couple of ocelots over there, right?
Ocelots, yeah. is that the name of the school? I did not know that.
Yeah.
So, Schoolcraft, welcome, Rich. What you're drinking a PBR as well as we just poured you a Mirror Mirror. Have you gotten a chance to try it yet?
Yeah. Mirror Mirror is great. Smells like what? Cinnamon and clove, like that. Thing that's
no, I still know what I'm smelling.
All right.
I can't tell what the beer. It smells like barley wine.
Yeah,
you gotta like dive your nose into it, like cover it around like that.
You really do.
It's a barley wine great. Aged in 50% wine barrel. So I wonder what the other 50%
barley.
The other
barrels.
Has to be in a regular oak barrel.
Well, or was it only 50% aged? And it's a mix of half mixed, half not mixed.
I told you, tweet Deschutes and ask them.
You know what? I'm gonna do that right now.
See if they respond before the end of the show. They got 2 hours. We're talking to you, Deschutes.
All right, you better be listening to this.
I'm sure they are.
C-list podcast in Metro Detroit, far away.
Struggling podcast.
That's right. 51 episodes in. Tom, what's going on? Welcome to the show. You got a PC Pills in front of you, as well as the Mirror Mirror. How do you like the PC Pills?
PC Pills is awesome. I've had it before, right when it first came out, and it's just one of those great. That's still a summer beer, right?
I guess so. Yeah, nice, crisp, easy to drink. I mean, any beer is a summer beer if you try hard enough.
True that.
I think that's pretty much our motto with anything. If any beer is a session beer, if you try hard enough.
That's true, yeah.
You can slam any beer if you try hard enough.
Oh, yeah, you definitely can.
So, we'll start with Rich. So, explain to us, you know, we brought you in. You guys are part of the brewery and distilling program.
Right.
Which is a culinary arts program, I believe, over at Schoolcraft College. So, kind of explain, you're in year two. So, you got a lot of people that are getting ready to go through year two. So, where are those people at and what's kind of going on right now?
Well, we started the program last fall, so we ran a couple of the courses and then brought in more professional brewers to teach in the program. Mm-hmm. And so after two whole semesters, we had our first graduates. We had six of them. So it's a 24-credit certificate program. You can get through it in two semesters. Most folks are coming in and they're buckling down. They're doing it full-time. They're getting right through it. We have some part-timers, too, so in that experience, we learned some things, brought some of our students back. We did a review of the curriculum. We made some changes that are going to go into effect in 2017. So it's going full force right now. We have 92 in the program. The brewery just came online. We got a 7-barrel commercial system that Tom will talk about. But that makes us pretty much the first college in the state that's running a full commercial-sized brewery along with a licensed brew pub.
So, because I know, I'm pretty sure Ferris State and Central Michigan both have some type of brewing programs there.
Yeah, CMU has a certificate program. They've been going for a couple of years now. The CMU program didn't have – it's strong.
Yeah, all right.
I took a little bit of too big a glug out of that
yeah.
one.
The CMU program, Tom knows some folks up there, and I've talked to one or two, and they are I think right now they're getting a brewery on site too, so they can do this. The Ferris program is really just about business.
Okay.
We have around here probably the other significant programs out at Grand Rapids Community College. They just started theirs too. They're similar in terms of
Do you know their team name there over
Who
at GRCC?
It? No, I don't. I know the Ocelots. That's a local area.
Yeah,
yeah, but I'm curious, you're opening a brew pub. Am I coming to Six and Haggerty to the campus and going to drink? Is that really where it is?
If you come to Seven and Haggerty, you actually will be able to get the beer, because if you're down at Six, we...
Well, you're kind of between them.
We're between them.
I was going to say, you're like...
Pull into the north parking lot at Seven and Haggerty.
Is that where it's at? Yeah. On the north side? Okay, yeah, because I know you have big parking lots on both sides. I know the area kind of well.
Yeah.
But no, that's actually interesting. So I can just drive to the school, avoid the security, drink the beer.
No. The security guys, they're on our side.
They're drinking too.
No,
so
they're off. They don't drink. But, you know, You guys are, you know, you're going to get me in trouble.
No.
Nobody listens to the show. You're fine.
So, yeah, we're located there, you know, that end of the American Harvest Brew Pub and Restaurant, which is run by our culinary program. It's located in the Vista Tech Center. That's at 7 and Hagerty.
Okay.
And it is, like Ken was saying, it's part of the culinary program. Mm-hmm. So we use the same kind of model in terms of, you know, doing the full ecosystem of the industry. So you get business, you get brew house operations, you get science, you get beer styles and flavors, you get service, you get advanced, you get the marketing and operations management, and cellaring, packaging, and quality management. Because you know, as I was putting the program together, I was talking to a lot of brewers. Tom was the first one that I ran into, and then I talked to a whole bunch of other folks that really were really helpful. But through that process, a lot of people said, oh, you know, you should get out and get a job as an assistant brewer. But most people don't start that way. They start in packaging and they start in cellaring. So we made sure that all that was part of the program so that you could get a job and be qualified to go in and at least talk the language to somebody so they could ask you more questions and teach you what else you needed to learn once you were able to land the job.
So for the students itself, are they looking to start their own brewery, you think, general consensus, or are they looking to work in the beer industry?
It's all over the place. We've got people who are getting ready to retire and maybe looking to start their own place or just find a part-time job when they're done with their real job, if you will. And then there's the young people who just want to get into the industry and work in a brewery.
Okay.
And there's also those, I always do a show of hands in my first class, who wants to start a brewery? Well, it's about half. So, and the rest of them are just, well, I just want to work in the business. So they're there to learn it. So
I love the idea. That's why, you know, when I had saw it in Half Penny's magazine, the Michigan Beer Guide, that you guys are opening up a brewery, I was able to dig in a little deeper in regards to what's going on, which is why I reached out to you guys. And I was like, you know, hey, come on, talk about it. Because we've talked about, you know, going to school for beer here on this show. We talked about Central's program. We talked about
Ferris
States
program. Yeah, someone out that way.
You know what that team name
before.
Is? That's the Catamounts.
I don't know. Is that the school we're even talking? I know it was out in Vermont somewhere. The
Vermont Catamounts. Yeah.
Is that a real thing?
I swear to God,
I'm
because
sure
I remember
is.
The program with Tyler Coppenrath there.
What does that mean?
Power forward. Yeah. Three-point shooter.
Is that like
NCAA
something
tournament.
That makes your eyes all cloudy?
The Catamount. It's like a puma. It's like a
cataract.
The Catamount. It's like another big cat. It's like a mountain lion that's native to the Northeast.
A Catamount?
Catamount.
Is a mountain cat?
It's a cat. Go figure, right?
Man, I'm really good at this game.
It's a big cat.
It's a big cat.
Sorry to completely unravel that conversation.
Oh, that's just funny.
And the fact that you knew what it was, I'm like the
obscure, like feline, like wild feline
well, there's
names going
there's
on.
There's 314 teams in the NCAA. You have to know the mascots.
You have to know.
How else are you going to pick your NCAA bracket?
What's Miami's team name?
Which Miami? The Red Hawks or the Hurricanes?
See what I did there?
Gotcha.
Trying to go for it. Anyways, back to Schoolcraft. So this is your second year. How did you guys create the curriculum, though? How do you did you start from zero and work your way up, or did you kind of?
Yeah, we started from zero.
Okay.
We've been kicking around the idea back in 2014, and we have a lot of resources at our disposal. So I've got a research and analytics department, and they did some market research, and we leveraged some really huge databases so we could look at the state of the market for jobs. And obviously, as everybody now knows, you know, Michigan is, you know, we're blowing up. But back in 2014, it was just some talk. Oh, you know, it looks like Michigan's coming up. We're not, you're eighth, we're 10th, we're sixth, that kind of thing. So we saw that there was like 29% growth in brewing jobs just in this Tri-County area over between now and 2020. And we thought, well, that actually translates to about 300-400 jobs in the next few years. And I said, well, you know, that's our business, you know, getting people to change their lives. So I talked to the president. He okayed it. The board of trustees said, go ahead with it. And it's not just, you know, going ahead with the program. It's the million-dollar brewery that comes with it. So I had to, you know, get them to find a coffee can full of money in the backyard. but started doing this in January 2015. And there's a process for doing this called a DACM. It's a developing a curriculum. But you do it for occupational programs. And you're really, go out and you talk to experts. You want to find out what knowledge somebody needs, what their attitudes have to be, and what skill sets do they need. So the first attempt was to go out and just go visit some brew pubs and breweries.
Darn.
Yeah.
Market research like that.
Rough job, yeah. Right?
Did you get to keep the receipts and expense them?
Yeah, I think you did.
I didn't expense them because my wife had to drive home every
Uber. Uber's a great expense.
Yeah. But, you know, it comes down to I actually went to one place. The brewer wasn't there. And I said to my wife, well, let's go up to Block Brewery up there in Howell. And it was a Saturday, busy. By the time we got there, it was 5 o'clock. By the time we got there, I think I'd already had several samplers at the other place. we're sitting there, and the first thing I did was sample the beer. Yeah, if the place I'm going to isn't making good beer, you know, let's go to the next place. The next thing I did was I talked to the people working in there. So I talked to servers. I tried to talk to bartenders. I want to know if they're happy. Because it tells you a lot about the business savvy of the persons that are in charge of that. And the next thing was we made a request. We said, hey, there's a brewer here. And, you know, real busy. And so I see this guy running around. I mean, he's like busy as hell and he's running around.
I'm trying to get the hell out of there. It's late Saturday night, right?
Yeah. He's done.
I need a beer.
My wife says, can we have 5 minutes with the brewer? And so Tom comes over and he says, I got 5 minutes. I said what I was doing.
Well, I didn't know him from Adam, so no,
that was part of the plan. So Tom actually, the first thing was he took time to talk to me. I told him real quick what I was doing. He said, I'm up for an interview. So I went back and I did like 3-hour interviews with all these people to figure out what do you need to know? And more importantly, I think, what don't you need to know? Sometimes programs just want to like throw the whole bucket at you. That's not efficient. You know, you got to know what you need to know to get a job in cellaring and packaging, brewing, front of the house. And so I talked to Tom and, oh, geez, a whole bunch of people. And they gave me enough information to put the first blush together. Tom came to work for us in December. Annette came and worked for us. Joe, I think I had Joe on board for
second semester.
Yeah. Joe Walters on board for the second semester. And
Joe Walters
for the first.
Is?
Liberty
yeah.
Street.
Yeah, so Joe's the brewer at Liberty Street, the owner of the production facility he's got done on Levan, and he teaches cellaring, packaging, and quality management. He's got a ton of packaging experience. We have Ken Below from Brew Detroit. He's the brewer there. He's teaching advanced brewing and distillation. Annette May is a certified Cicerone. She's teaching the Beer Styles and Flavors course, and she's teaching the beverage management class. John Ross, he's got tons of experience with Heineken. He's doing the marketing and operations management course. And I'm teaching the brewing science course. All my background is in plant physiology and science and physics and things like that. And I've been brewing for 20 years as a home brewer. So I can translate that to why do you need to know the science?
Well, so, you know, a lot of people that we talk about, you know, so you got your start in home brewing. What was your first brew? What was the first brew that you made 20 years ago?
I remember the very first brew was an ESB, you know, it was a strong bitters.
Wow.
And it was just an extract. It was actually a partial extract brew. And the thing that hooked me was it was the best beer I'd ever had in my life. It was fresh. It was delicious. It went from beer to being like food. I mean, it had all those qualities of food. And, you know, I made it. I mean, I drink almost everything I make, even if it's a mistake, because I made it.
So let's go over to Tom for a minute. So, Tom, you were working at Block. You have a long history in regards to brewing. We were talking before the show. So how did you get your start in brew making? Were you a home brewer before you started brewing for a company, or did you just go right into working for a company?
No, I mean, I was a home brewer.
Okay.
And at the time when I was doing the side work out at Michigan Brewing Company, I thought, well, man, I want to do this for a living. Well, I was working in the auto industry, and then I found out that brewers really don't make that much money. So I said, well, you know what, I'll just keep learning and working out here. I was working for beer, and it was pretty cool. And as soon as I got my hands on the brew house out there and made my first 30-barrel batch of beer, in the same amount of time I was making 5 gallons at home, I said, I think I'm done at home. So, and then just kind of kept going from there and working out there on the side. And spent over the years many different breweries now throughout the state and outside of the state too. So,
well, I think a lot of breweries. I think the goal isn't necessarily, you know, get buku bucks, get rich, get famous, get out. It's not. They want to live in the black.
And that's when I made the decision a few years back. I'm like, I'm done with our lovely auto industry, and I don't care about the money anymore. I'm getting a little bit older, and I want to do something I love to do. And the hell with the money. And like you said, just be in the black. And that's all I wanted. And I ended up at Schoolcraft a year or so ago. And, you know, I'm loving life. So I got probably one of the best brewer's jobs there is.
So do you teach any of the classes?
Yeah, I have the operations, brewhouse operations class. I pretty much just, my job is to teach them what all the equipment does. You know, how to clean a tank, how to sanitize. You know, so when you go to work for another brewery, that at least you've got that knowledge of, all right, well, I know what a tri-clamp is. I know how to hook up a hose to a tank, and I can clean a tank, and all that stuff, those tools that you need to walk into a brewery and actually do the job from day one, whereas a greenhorn, you know, they don't know that, and they're going to have to get taught that, and that takes time from the, you know, from the other people's jobs in the brewery. So you got somebody walks in, and hopefully they can kind of hit the ground running.
So
I got the hands-on stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I do.
How do you like teaching, though? Because obviously this is a lot different than working in the auto industry or brewing yourself.
Yeah, I taught a little bit at Michigan State.
Oh, really?
I worked out at the distillery out there at MSU. So I taught a class there. So I already knew what it was like to teach students how to make alcohol and about beer and stuff like that. So I knew I loved it. And so, you know, when Rich and I first started talking, I'm like, you know what, this is a perfect job for me, because I enjoy the students. It's just their enthusiasm is just, some days you're just kind of, you know how you have those blah days, and then all of a sudden a student comes in all fired up, and they're like, oh my God, this is awesome, this is the best thing in the world, and I freaking love this. I'm like, yeah, that's why I'm doing this.
So, you know, we talked about the brewing, but it's brewing and distillation.
Correct.
So what do you got? You guys don't have a distillery there at the moment. You're just kind of
not teaching Everclear making yet, or
no.
Absinthe making.
They'll know how to make it. We just don't have the equipment.
Oh,
so,
gotcha.
You know, Ken Bilal takes them around to distilleries. We've got relationship with distillers. I teach the distillation science and wood maturation and stuff like that, wood chemistry and things. So they have an understanding of it. We have distillers in the program. But, you know, it's we're working on it. I mean, it's a lot of – there are a lot of different legal divisions and things you got to do to have a distillery as opposed to the brew pub. And the brew pub license specifically says you can't have a distillery. So you got to set up a bunch of interesting – business arrangements and partnerships.
We got to work the law. We got to find the law.
Right. That's, I mean, yeah.
You know, speaking of law, you know who never got back to me was Tom Hooker.
I forgot about that. Yeah, well, that's too bad.
TB Hooker was his name.
He probably could have used the publicity. It's too bad.
Yeah. So obviously, you guys probably in the industry are well aware that Tom B. Hooker is trying to raise the tax on the barrels by 250%. So we invited him onto the show. And no response.
We probably didn't make his radar.
I doubt it.
Really? A state rep? You can make their radar, believe me.
Oh, yeah.
They're not out of touch. You can,
being facetious.
Oh, I was going to say, you can get a hold of a congressman.
Well, it was obvious easily. For the fact that it was you know, as Rob mentioned it, and as the term is there, a sin tax. And therefore, he just doesn't want to talk about it because he doesn't want to.
It's not going to pass. He doesn't want to just have the bad. Well, he's going out anyways.
No, yeah, he's out. He's up for election in a different.
You said it was like some sort of sanitation manager.
Something ridiculous.
He has to leave.
Yep. So he's going to be leaving. So we tried to get him on the show because we wanted to have because I believe there was a big Freep article, and I want to say, and I'm probably wrong, but I'm pretty sure it was Storm Clouds head brewer that had a huge interview within that Freep article.
Storm Cloud from Frankfurt?
Yeah. Might have been somebody else. I would have double-checked to try to schedule this, but I was going to get Tom in and try to get him on the phone because Frankfurt's definitely a little bit of a drive to Royal Oak.
Yeah.
I don't think Byron Center's very close either.
Oh, well, he's a state representative. That's only an hour and a half, 2 hours, depending on how fast you drive down 94.
He would make time on his phone if he wanted to do
it. His horse and buggy doesn't go more than 15 miles an hour.
Good Lord.
He just has to pack the hardtack for the drive home.
Sorry. See what you did there.
See
what
I'm
Oh, boy.
So Tom, what was your first beer that you brewed then?
At home?
Yeah.
It was probably just like an amber. You know,
okay.
Just a basic extract kit, and then shortly went out into the all green brewing right after that, and never left it. So,
do you still home brew now?
No,
no.
Do you guys
probably
have
brew enough? To...
I do brew enough. I get that question a
Go
lot.
Go home and do more.
And it is really just, you know, the time it takes to at home to do it. I mean, I can do it at work, so. And usually the follow-up question is, how do you develop your recipes? Well, 20 years, you've been doing it for a while. It's kind of like a chef. You kind of know what flavors go together and how to formulate that recipe to make a beer. So my test beers are just, they're full-on seven-barrel batches, and we roll with it.
I always like to ask about happy mistakes or happy accidents. Is there something that you tried to make or you conceived in your mind, it just didn't turn out exactly how you wanted, but it actually turned out pretty good or even better than you thought you wanted?
Well, I think both of us can answer that question. Yeah, I mean, you always have that beer that might not be exactly the way you thought it was going to come out, and it usually you can tweak it. I mean, for me, I think they've always been pretty damn good, even at home and on a professional level, but as a perfectionist, you think, oh, man, I'm going to tweak this. I'm going to add a little bit more Caramel 60, or maybe I want to change the hop just a little bit. Usually the customer, they're enjoying it, but you as the brewer go, I'm going to just tweak it because it's not exactly what I wanted. So, you know, major faux pas, no. Have I been around them in other breweries? Yeah, we've fixed them.
We were talking about it because that's what Alt 22 was with Arbor Brewing, was a mistake.
Right.
And they put it on draft because they were just like, you know, hey, and people started drinking it and ordering a second and a third. And they're like, what do you mean you're ordering a second and a third? We're just trying to get rid of it. Mind you, they got rid of it, and I'm very upset. And I told Matt that while he was here. But yeah, it's one of those things to where it's always interesting to see, you know, how some of these mistakes make it to big batches and continuous brewing.
And sometimes those mistakes happen during the course of the brew day, where all of a sudden you realize, whoa, I didn't get the extraction I wanted, and I measure my gravity in my kettle and it's not there. It's like, uh-oh, this ain't going to be the same beer I started out with. And so you go, well, it's going to be a session pale ale now instead of whatever it was, you know.
Is this how session Russian Imperial Stouts get invented?
That's just,
no,
yeah,
way that we've heard that phrase, but I forget where we heard that.
Well,
but
that's a brewer just ripping at the session terminology.
Like,
so
I was like, that doesn't make sense. But yeah, that's how that gets invented.
So how do you guys work on trying to teach consistency? Because obviously that's the big thing that a lot of brewers want is consistency.
Right. For me, it's you know, paying attention to your pH and your mash. Your gravities or your extractions coming into your kettle, you can usually, you know, there's adjustments you can do. So if you miss it a little bit, you boil a little bit longer, or you need to add water to it. I mean, sometimes you just have to add water to catch your gravity. So those are the consistency things. And then just in general, your process. So sanitation, you know, cleaning and being sanitary throughout your whole process and how you handle your liquid on a daily basis in the brewery so that nothing goes wrong, so you don't get an infection anywhere along the line. And this is why you do this, and this is how you do it, so that in the end result, your liquid is fine every time. So it's a process for me more than anything else that I'm trying to instill on the students, that this is how your product's going to be consistent. It's going to be good every time.
What do you see as the most common mistake people either make, or they don't think to do a certain step to make it better, or what's I guess the biggest pitfall or landmine you see people running into, especially newer people that maybe you're teaching?
I mean, I even see it on the professional ranks. I see people not managing their pH or their mash. So you guys are, a couple of you guys are home brewers, right? Or all of you?
I am.
Dan is. Okay. I live in a 500 square foot apartment.
Yeah, she lives in a closet.
Right, yeah.
I'm a home drinker.
Oh, drinker. I do that too. That's
so I teach the practical side, which is how to measure and how to adjust it while you're on the fly during your brew day. And then in Rich's class, he dives right into the science of why you need to do it. But even on a professional level, I've walked into breweries where they don't have a pH meter in the brewery. Well, really? I mean, that's super important. Your water pH and your mash pH are going to dictate how your beer is going
to
end up.
So I want to ask a question. I hate to interrupt you, but did you have a pH level your first job at a brewery?
What?
Did you have the tool?
Oh, yeah.
To test? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
A pH meter, not level.
Level, sorry. Beer level.
Yeah, Michigan Brewing Company, everything was done correctly there, and I was taught by some very good mentors throughout my years there, and there was always a pH meter there. And it was always part of the process.
So how do the students take the science part of it then? Because obviously they want to make beer and they want to be, you know.
And they're sitting in chemistry class all of a sudden is what happens.
That's a little bit of a challenge because five times a night when I'm doing the class, I got to say, and why do you need to know this? And I tell them from the start, I say you don't need to be a scientist to make good beer. You're going to need to be a scientist when you make bad beer because you got to know how to fix it. And you got to be a scientist to make the same good beer 100 times in a row.
Yep.
So we start from that perspective. And, for instance, one of the things I hit him with early is things like pH, not just, why it's important to brewing, but I take him through the whole mathematical derivation of, you know, the auto-ionization of water.
How many of them stay awake during that process?
About half.
That wouldn't be one of them.
But in the end, I tell them this, like, what do you need to know this? Because a lot of brewers just throw around pH, and they don't know what it is, and they don't know what you would throw in to change it. They do get that it's acid is one of the things that changes it because it's all hydrogen ions. But a lot of people get mixed up between what's alkalinity and what's pH. Alkalinity is not pH. It influences pH, but it's all these carbonate ions, and it is really bad for beer. And so one of the first things I teach them early on is let's go and augment the water. Let's look at your water chemistry, and let's figure out how to fix it. And so for the lab, each lab team gets assigned a city. So somebody's in Dortmund, and somebody's over here in London, and somebody's in Dublin, and somebody's in Milwaukee, and somebody's Livonia, and one team is always my house because I have incredibly alkaline hard water. I'm like, okay, you guys do the work for the next beer I'm going to, you know, be doing. And then we take them through the whole process. How do you augment the calcium ions? How do you change the alkalinity to be suitable for the style of beer? So I'll say, okay, you guys in Milwaukee, you're going to make a stout. You guys in Dublin, I'm going to have you go make like a Berliner Weiss, so I mix it up. And they have to actually go through the chemical process to figure out how to make good water. Because a lot of brewers, homebrewers especially, they start out with good water and they make okay beers. But the thing that we found when we did the water analysis for Detroit City Water was it's good water, but it has just a little too much residual alkalinity to make a Kolsch. You really do have to throw in some calcium salts. You really do have to throw in some acid, like phosphoric or something like that, to get that color all the way down to like 3 or 4 SRM. The brewing water for Detroit is good for about 10 or 12 SRM. Down at that end, you get a one-dimensional kind of a beer with harsh extraction from your hops. So we teach them things like that. Why do you need to know this stuff? And then by the end, they're tired of hearing about alpha amylase and beta amylase, and you know, but they're experts in it. So,
is there something that the class has surprised you with? Is there like an idea or maybe a thought or even a suggestion that some student in the back row that you never even called on came up and just turned a light on for you?
Well, I got to tell you, Tom was talking about what it's like to teach, and I think the real reward comes when, as somebody who's teaching somebody, you can submerge your ego enough to say, I'm going to learn from people. And so you're not just always the authority. And I've learned a lot from a lot of my students because they'll say something, we'll have a discussion about it, and I'll go, wow, I need to look that up. I need to figure that out. And then that just gets turned back into the course.
And then that knowledge becomes part of the course going forward. So the things that surprise me are the things that I get to learn from. And these people all have incredible experiences. We don't just have people who want to be brewers. We had a kombucha brewer in there. We have distillers in there. We have all kinds of people from all kinds of backgrounds. And so they all bring all these interesting experiences. And I get to learn more about beer. You know, if they raise a question, I'll go, I don't know. I'm going to go find the research on that, and we'll bring it back to the class next week.
Now, is the research code for I'm going to go call Tom?
No. No, we go to the Journal of the Institute of Brewing. We go to the Journal of the American Society of Brewing Chemists. We go to, you know, we go to all the white – we go to the scientific papers. And so in my class, when I put things up on the board, people are like, that's not true. You know, you can get higher than 120 IBUs on a single boil. Like, let's go through the math on that. So a lot of brewers will say, no, you know, I just brewed an 89 IBU double IPA. Well, they're not taking into account, neither do their calculators take into account that just like sugar, you can only get a certain amount of alpha acid actually dissolved in water. There's a limit. There's a saturation point. So we go through the math on that. And
so what's technically the highest IBU you can get then? There's
this theoretical level of 120, which is actually the saturation point. And then you get variable amounts of isomerization from alpha acid. And the isomerized alpha acids, those are the ones that actually taste like 10 times bitter than the stuff you just taste in a hop. That's what you want. But things like surfaces of glass and stainless steel all actually kind of stick to this stuff. That stuff sticks to it, and you lose some here and you lose some there. You don't get full utilization, you know, in the hot boil. And the other thing is people think, the longer I boil it, the better. Well, that isomerization curve, up to about 2 hours and about 15 minutes, now what you're ending up doing is not just isomerizing the acids anymore, the alpha acids. You're starting to degrade the ones you already isomerized. So past a certain point, your bitterness actually starts to go down.
So it's a law of diminishing returns.
Yeah. So you know, the things that people have developed in brewing as a matter of course, like, I'm going to boil between 1 and 2 an hour, two and a half hours. That's because that's what works, you know. So humans are really good at doing things, observing what works best and doing it again. The thing I tell folks in the science class is there's a lot of stuff out there in the forums that's kind of built on maybe shaky logic. So all I want them to be able to do is not have an attitude, not be a know-it-all, not to get in arguments with people, but to at least say something doesn't make sense and I'm going to go find the answer to that.
Do you guys have midterms or final projects that involve your students actually brewing or putting together a recipe or something?
Absolutely. Ken Bailow's class right now, I think October 5th, where his half of he's got 10 students in his class right now, so he's got two teams of five, and they've both developed a recipe. And so the first one's going to be brewed on the 5th, and I think the following week after that will be the second group coming in. So they've done an Imperial Stout and an Imperial IPA recipe that we've, you know, they're going to come in and brew themselves. So they developed it, and they're going to be making the beer themselves.
So I want to harken back to a question, because obviously you were talking about 120 is kind of like the saturation point. So how do breweries get away with saying something along the lines of, and as I'm looking at the list right now, like I see Flying Monkeys Alpha Fornicate. Yeah,
what
fornication. That's the right word.
You didn't
want to
say that unless it was,
I was
right.
Like, exactly. And it says 2,500 IBU.
Yeah, the only way to do that is to add it afterwards, like an alpha row hop extract or something like that. Yeah.
You have 35,000 IBUs.
So you basically get to wherever your IBU level is from brewing it, and then you add an extract that adds bitterness to the beer.
Yeah,
so
that's
you're,
how you do it.
That's disgusting.
So I'm kind of at
they usually do taste disgusting.
That's
as extract.
How they make hot sauce, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Peppers aren't that hot, so.
Wait, hold on. Some peppers are pretty hot.
Some are pretty
hot,
but, you know, the 3 million
Scoville
capsaicin.
I've had a Carolina Reaper. They're pretty hot.
So they're
know what we're doing.
From what
I thought it was the Cal Bears, not the Reapers.
No, the Carolina Reapers.
Carolina Reapers.
Yeah, the real hot
one. There we go.
That was in that beer, and it was underwhelming.
Was that the beer that somebody? Oh, Cask Ale Fest. Yeah. That's right.
It was like a Carolina Reaper Stout, and it wasn't that hot. I was disappointed.
Didn't feel it the next day.
No. Okay. No. Not at all.
Is there a level
underwhelming?
Is there a level at which the person who's consuming the beer really isn't going to notice a difference between IBUs? Like, I've always thought, like, mid to, like, 90s and above, you're really not going to know the difference between, like, 90 to 103.
CB-wise will say they notice, but...
Yeah, there's some of that out there, too. Like, the University of Oregon does a lot of good research, and they do a lot of this sensory research. And some of the stuff I've seen say that past about 75 IBUs, people really can't taste much more than that.
I believe that. I 100% believe that.
Yeah.
Hey, so I hate to cut you guys off. We're going to take a quick break.
Already?
I know. It's 7:40. We're going to be right back with the Better on Draft podcast. And we are back with episode number 51 of the Better on Draft podcast. Dan is running right back into the room right now as we are live. We still have the good gentleman from Schoolcraft. We thank you for coming on out. We appreciate you joining us. We're going to talk a little bit about some news that's going on within the world of beer itself. A lot of things are definitely... kind of this, on your radar.
Are we doing this how Rob does it?
Yeah.
Okay, you got it?
But I'm paying attention because you were supposed to do it, but you didn't
No one told me that.
I told you that. You weren't paying attention. This is all your fault.
Was this last week you told?
I don't remember.
It was on HipChat this week.
It was on HipChat, yeah.
Oh, I wasn't in there. You're right. I wasn't in there till yesterday afternoon. Yep, my bad.
So with that in mind, one of the big things, and I think this is like a – I could see Dan like doing the cabbage patch to this this news right now. The cabbage, you know, the little as nobody's watching me do it because obviously we're on the radio.
I'm trying to figure out what that is.
Anyways, so one of the big news topics this week is that pumpkin beer sales have tanked.
Yes. Oh, thank God.
Tanked.
Can we move past that fad now? Are we done? I see some nodding heads over here in the right way. Yeah.
Tired of pumpkin coffee, tired of pumpkin bread. I don't.
Yeah.
So some of the facts that have gone on right now, Shipyard reportedly made 40%. Of its money, so 40% of its sales from two of its beers, the Pumpkinhead and the Smash Pumpkin, and last year's sales dropped 10,000 barrels.
Good. You know what? Because I have a personal hate for Shipyard. You know.
Oh, okay.
No, quick story. 2003, so we're talking 13 years ago. I mean,
back in your 50s.
Back in my 50s.
What
Jesus
a grudge
Christ. Yeah. No, it's a running joke that no one gets, but except for us. Portland, Maine is where I'm at. Shipyard, Portland, Maine. So, you know, it's kind of where they're at. We're at a gas station, me and a mutual friend of ours. We see a beer that had purple.
Oh, I know the story.
Yeah, with a headless horseman holding a pumpkin. Like, oh, let's get that. That looks like awesome beer. Nope. A couple hours later, we crack it open. One sip each. We pour out the whole six pack. It was the pumpkin head from Shipyard. And no, that was the worst beer I've ever drank. I can't think of another beer I've ever poured out. But no, screw them. Screw pumpkin beer. I hope it goes away forever. I know you don't agree with me.
Oh, I like a lot of pumpkin beers. I don't go crazy, you know, white girl wasted in regards to pumpkin spice.
That wasn't
whatever.
White girl wasted. This is like I was going
to
throw.
No, I wasn't referring to you. I was referring to white girls who love their pumpkin spice.
Oh,
lattes
there's a lot of them. Yeah, there's a lot.
I think what's
going to
happen though is as craft beer grows, I think all of the seasonals are going to be taking a hit. I think you're going to see problems with Christmas lagers and Christmas ales.
I think you already see a problem with Christmas ales.
And I mean, there isn't really a spring seasonal that sells all that well. Sans a couple that we have locally, but you don't have a national.
Sam Adams.
Spring, what's their spring seasonal? They keep changing it up. It's been Cold Snap for the last 2 years.
I thought it was the Pills this year.
Cold Snap for the last two years. The year before that, there was still the Escape Route, which is the
Escape Route. What is that?
Which their Kolsch, which they then put in their thing. So there really isn't a spring seasonal beer. The pumpkin's dying, and we're going to see the same article in the next couple months about how, you know, Christmas and winter beers are. I think it's just as craft beer expands, people are going to want to try one of this beer and one of that beer and one of that beer, and they're not going to want to sit and drink that one Christmas beer or that one pumpkin beer. Because there's so many out there.
So what about Marzen's then?
I think it's the same. I mean, I think Marzen is truer to your imports than it is. I mean, that's just like an Oktoberfest beer. And I think.
Well, it is an Oktoberfest beer.
Well, I guess depending on how you want to label it. I think there are so many under the radar, though. I think when you see everything pumpkin comes out at the same time. Like you see Starbucks, you see
yeah, like
beer.
July now.
Yeah, like
on
but you
top
don't,
of that,
I guess
yeah.
You don't see Oktoberfest.
Was it Uncle Sam and jack-o'-lantern.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I guess my thought with Oktoberfest is you don't see Oktoberfest cake. Oktoberfest burgers. Like, pumpkin is basically put in everything right now, just like that nutmeg and clove is put in everything at Christmas time. So I think those flavors are kind of – they've been tried. They've been saturated. And, I mean, the thing about craft beer people is they're the least loyal people. They want to be able to taste everything. They want to know about everything.
Good Lord, you're right. You know, I never thought of it. Craft brew people, the least loyal. Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
so
I never thought of
we're
that.
Not, we're not brand loyal.
Exactly. They want to taste the newest and the freshest and the coolest and the hippest.
They'll
and
then obviously we're brand disloyal. How's Shipyard going, Dan?
Oh, I hate – I like Shipyard. I hate that beer.
Oh, you
know,
okay.
You know, I don't want Shipyard to go out of business, but that beer, wow, that's bad.
So Forbes, this was a Forbes article, and it says one of the the reasons for the drop include overproduction, oversaturation, too many people trying to cash in, and then a lot of, they say, hot autumn temperatures. So obviously the temperature has been raised.
You mean how it's been 80 here?
Yes.
And it's fall?
Yes.
Is that what you're referring to?
That is exactly what I'm referring to.
Maybe you should grab a Jack O'Shandy or a pumpkin shandy and bring one of those instead.
I like the traveler beers.
Beer, it's like a pumpkin pie shandy. I don't like pumpkin pie, but everyone who drinks it tells me it's amazing.
I've had a lot of traveler beers, and I don't think I've had a bad one yet. And it's one of those things to where, because it's a major brewery, isn't it?
Well, it's Sam Adams.
Sam Adams, yeah. So the question is, and we'll kind of go like a round table in regards to it. Do you think it is a risk, do you risk it going big on trending beers or stay small thinking the trend will change? So we'll talk about pumpkin spice beers. Do you think this is an ongoing trend going down, or do you think it's pretty much plateaued and it's going to stay where it's at this level, or do you think it'll fluctuate next year?
I think the best way to do it would be to do it in a limited quantity. I know Griffin Claw has done less this year than they have previously with their
BIP.
Or just their Screaming Pumpkin line in general, just to get it out of the market sooner. Because, I mean, you still go to some stores and you still see Illumina Vintage 2015 on some of their 4-packs.
You see a lot of Pumpkin still out there.
Oh, that's still a thing.
So I think the way to do October, or not Oktoberfest, but fall beers, and even really any seasonal, is do it in a small, manageable quantity. Make people who want it, you know, be able to find it, but not... Don't lead with your seasonal, because typically that's not going to be
Will remember the days when Sam Adams Oktoberfest was like the main...
It still is.
I still think it is, too.
But this is before... Now there's 20 other variants to go along with it. It's still the same, but...
Variants of Oktoberfest?
Different Oktoberfest, okay. And that's what I mean.
I was like is there like 20, a cherry Oktoberfest?
No, there's probably even more than 20 different Oktoberfests.
Yeah,
but back in the day, it was like, oh, here's Sam Adams Oktoberfest. It'll be good variant between, you know, a Newcastle, a PBR. Now it's all you can find of these damn October beers, these damn fall beers.
So let's go to Rich and Tom, because obviously they're teaching a class, and they're teaching marketing, they're teaching business, they're teaching the whole end-to-end production. You know, what are you going to, you know, you read this article. This is something you want to talk about to your students. How are you presenting it to your students?
I think it's going to depend on the course you're in. I'm on the science side. Our guy John does the marketing and operations management. He's more about methods of getting people to buy your beer, methods of marketing to different demographics that you don't think would be interested. But wrapped up in that, which is delivered to our students, is the idea that you need to understand your market. You need to have market research. You need to do data. So a lot of what's going on out there, these big companies, they're all using market research and they're using data. So they'll make beer that they can make money on. So even though there are losses, they're watching those trends, and they're going to continually cycle that information back from marketing back into their production. So we teach that kind of thing. So that's all I can speak to it from.
Tom? Oh, he's thinking.
Yeah, I'm thinking. I'm trying to not, like, be a hater on the pumpkin beers.
I'll love it. I don't think you'll be as bad as Dan over here. Nope. So.
But – you know, it's not a style that I enjoy.
That's fair.
I understand that there's a market for it, and I think that he's seeing them come out in July. That's the one thing.
And
going back to working in my days in a production brewery, we were making the pumpkin beer in
April.
Yeah, pretty much.
Because, I mean, a Marzen, an Oktoberfest beer, you start it in March. That's why it's called a Marzen beer.
You have to start making it. That's so, then you get it out into the marketplace. So for us, as we're in the production side, we're still in the middle of making our summer seasonal beer and trying to produce that pumpkin beer. So the brewery's stressed at that point. That's a hard time for us as production brewers. We were like, holy cow, we're going hard. So, you know, I'm just thinking back to those days, and I don't want to ever do them again, for one. But I just think that it should be more of a limited, you know, release. And people are going to drink it. But here's the deal with pumpkin beers. If you put it on tap, a customer typically comes in and drinks one.
Yep. Or two. And then they hang
maybe back to two. And then they're going to go back and drink what they normally drink. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it sells as much as everybody thinks it's selling. I've just seen it in the brew pubs and breweries that I worked at where, oh, you need to have a Oktoberfest or you need to have a pumpkin beer. Well, I made it, and it's still around in March.
You need to have a brown ale. That's what I'd say.
I always have a brown ale on.
Thank you.
So
I'll be there a lot then.
Real sidetrack. People don't.
Is there a flavor or maybe a fruit or a vegetable or something that you guys like to work with or an adjunct that you guys like to put in your beers? Honey, spruce, oranges. Is there something that you like to work with or that you think brings out beer really well?
I'm always looking for something new. Just like a chef. I'm always looking for finding something like, wow, that's perfect for beer. Blood oranges right now, I think.
So that's a big thing across the board.
It is.
A lot of people like that.
I just had Super Fuzz from Elysian, which is their blood orange pale.
You didn't like that, did you?
I remember what you said.
I think done correctly, it's a great
I think the Sheboygan blood orange is crazy.
I have not had theirs. Oh. And
Run, don't walk.
Okay. Yeah, and I just think it's a good match for the hops in the IPAs and the pale ales. I mean, I think it does a really good job done correctly. It's just a great pairing. So, but I mean, if I find another fruit that I think that's gonna do it or whatever it is, you know, something I ate one night or something I had somewhere, I'm like, oh my God, that's gonna go in a beer. I don't know what beer yet, but it's gonna work somewhere.
I think that whatever flavor you use, it needs to be in balance. Some of these things hit me over the head. And you know, if people, if they're not used to working with a particular fruit, they don't understand the palette of flavors. I mean, chefs understand flavor palettes, and sometimes people come at it like, I'm really going to hit you over the head with this watermelon or pineapple or something.
Oh God, what was that watermelon beer we had?
Dorados.
That was bad.
Well, it's probably using an extract or a flavoring or something that it's. A lot of times they'll use
It was Ballast Point. Yeah,
okay.
What it was.
Yeah, if they use an oil or an extract, you can taste it right away. I mean, the less experienced beer consumer may get like a blueberry wheat someplace, and I had one in a place, and it comes out and it's clear and it's yellow, and I'm like, oh, they didn't use real fruit in this. It's all made with extract, and I'm like, oh, it's going to hit me over the head with it. And it's, ugh.
So I guess that's my biggest thing is using real ingredients rather than some of these, you know, manufactured ingredients. And I'm not a hippie or anything like that, but the flavors that come out from them are so much better than something out of a little bottle that's, you know, a half ounce.
Concentrate.
Concentrates actually work pretty well.
Okay.
But it's the artificial ones that are, you can tell.
Made in a lab somewhere.
And that's where, you know, I get influenced from the chefs, the ones that I've worked with in the past and also at Schoolcraft of, you know, what ingredients they're using. So I see what's coming in the door every day. And so I'm always looking. I look at every, like, dish that they're making. And I'm like, what is that? And so I'm constantly thinking, well, how's that going to go? Maybe that'll go into a beer somewhere along the line. So I guess that's where I get influenced from that.
It works for me. So we're going to go right into the next little news thing. And I'm going to skip one because it kind of fits the same thing. And it talks about Dan's Shipyard's pumpkins. So
wait, it talks about that specifically?
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. Am I allowed to do this right here?
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, there we go. That's the first one of the night. We usually have a few of those.
So In regards to, it says, in the hunt for the next hot beer, it's harder to find the good old standby. So that's the name of the category. And it talks about recent market survey, and I definitely fall into this group. 44% of craft beer drinkers say it is a source of pride to try as many different kinds of beer as they can.
Because you're unloyal. You're disloyal.
So I disagree with that.
So hold on. Is this talking about having – it's hard to find the goods, the normal or the staple because we're loading up the stores with all these fads?
Yes.
Is that where – okay. I think I understood it correctly.
Yeah. So the day of hyper loyalty to a few breweries and even a specific three or four beers from those breweries is long gone. This is from Washington's Meridian Pint, which is part of the Washington Post. There you go. So it's a lifestyle blog, part of the Washington Post. So, one of the things, I love trying new beers. I love, beer I've never seen before. I love it. But when you talk about a beer in a brewery and you're talking, I stick to some of the, probably the good five of the same beers all the time. I always stick with Bel Air Brown. That's probably one of my biggest beers that I go to. I always stick with Ghetto Blaster. From Motor City Brew Works.
You heard English Dark Mild?
Oh, I love Ghetto Blaster. Wow.
I never see you drink that. That's
because it's usually gone when it gets into my refrigerator.
Oh, there it is. I told you it would still back online.
Looks like we're back up online. But I have these beers that I always go to. And even when I go to a brewery, I'll try, three or four of the beers, like Kunin. Like I went to Kunin, I tried three or four. I had a flight and I had my pint of the Double Nut Brown. Because I'm like, that's the beer that I want, but I'm going to try these other beers just to see if I like any of them. So it's not necessarily that, I'm just trying beers to try new beers and I don't care about what I love. Like, I just want to try new beers and get my E-rep up on Untappd. Yeah. I want to try new beers to see if I'm going to like something new, but I'm still going to always fall towards, Dragon Mead. I'll always fall towards Castle Bright, or I'll always fall towards Reverend Fred's, London Brown. These beers from those breweries that I'll always choose. And when I see them on tap, especially the non-standard beers from those breweries. So you're talking like Dragon Mead and Kunin. You're never going to see a London Brown at a beer store. But you might see it at Embrew. And therefore, I might be like, well, I'm going to have that because I love that beer. So I think I still personally stay loyal. So the question goes, what should legacy beers do in order to stay relevant? And I think this is one of the things where we talk about the legacy beers of Michigan. Two Hearted, definitely on the top of that list. I was hoping to have more when I said Two Hearted, but it's really
Bell's Best.
Bell's Best. Well, I mean, Bell's Best Brown is definitely a great beer, but I don't think I see that as a staple.
How about Bell's Amber?
Soft Parade. I would say
Bell's
Soft
Amber,
Parade.
Then.
Bell's Amber is up there.
Norm's? Norm's IPA?
Norm's Raggedy Ass is definitely
even
a
Rojo.
Current.
I'm trying to think
El Rojo.
I'm trying to think of other
so, you know,
legacy.
So bars continuously rotate beers, and you have your standard beer bars, your Embrew, your One-Eyed Betty's, your what was the name of the beer bar that you were talking about earlier in Rochester Hills? Penny Black?
Penny Black, yeah. You
have these beer bars that continuously rotate, but then you go to a bar like a Muldoon's over in Rochester Hills, and it's really they have one or two rotating taps, but they have the standard every single. They have for
PBR,
the craft beer,
your Labatt.
For the craft beer lovers, you have Norm's, Guinness, and Shock Top.
Yep.
And then they have the rest of the stuff. And then, one or two rotating. Like they got Rochester Hills Oktoberfest now, which I had one last night. It's saying, do breweries need to be experimental with these new flavors to get people to continuously keep trying their new beers? Or do they stick to their staples and hammer down?
No. I think this goes.
No, exactly. What?
I think they need to stick to their guns. I mean, I think this kind of goes off to the last conversation we just had about your pumpkin beers, those are your one-offs, the things that you do seasonally. If you stick to what you know and what you do well, those will always be in fashion. I mean, there's that, I don't think it's a Wells Fargo commercial, but it's one about the guy that he's the hat maker in old times.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
The fashion becomes
is
big, tall hats.
Wells Fargo opens 2 million accounts.
1.8. I think, there's a reason why Sam Adams Boston Lager is Sam Adams Boston Lager. I mean, they have their full line. But their flagship and what they sell best is still the Boston Lager. There's a reason why the macro brews still sell what the macro brews sell. So I think you're always going to have your flagship, and that's going to lead your brand. So I think that if you try to compete, you're going to spread yourself too thin. You might put out a brew that you're not exactly happy with, and it might, you know, put a bad taste in your mouth for someone who's never had it. Maybe you do put out a pumpkin just because you're catering to that crowd, and it's not that great. And then someone's not going to have your flagship, which is actually really great. You know, Bell's just came out with Oktoberfest bottles for the first time in 6 years. So if that's garbage and someone's never had Two Hearted or never had Oberon, if this is their first experience in craft beer, they're not going to go, you know, navigate to what Bell's kind of wants. So,
well, speaking of Oktoberfest bottles, you know where you can get them, right?
Zaytuna Liquor.
Zaytuna Liquor over in Rochester Hills.
No, I was playing.
he was softballing that one to me right there.
Terrible.
Go say hi to Jack over at M59 on Rochester Road. They're open 7 days a week. Full on liquor store, beer store,
cigar.
They got a little walk in humidor too. It's not like one of those, you know, shoddy humidors they put in. It's like filled with black and milds and backwoods. It's actually got real cigars.
Turn black and milds and blunt wraps. Is that no?
Is that Swisher Sweets?
You got to preserve the great flavor.
And the wine flavor. Yeah.
It's the jazz. They call it jazz, not wine.
Take a look over there. So you always say hi to Jack or Gus. If Gus is there, that means Jack's out drinking.
He was last week.
I know. So go say hi to them. We appreciate it. But Dan, what do you think?
No, you have to stick. Same with what Matt said. You have to stick with some staples. You mentioned Sam Adams. If I'm somewhere that I'm not familiar with, airport, something like that, they're going to have the Sam Adams. I'm going to order that before pumpkin, whatever, cranberry,
pumpkin,
whatever.
Cran pumpkin?
Yeah, cran pumpkin stout or whatever you're doing.
Session Imperial.
Session Imperial stout. You have to stick with those staples. I mean, if you want to chase a fad, you'll probably be out of business. These guys might agree. I don't know. They're more...
Oh, we'll find out when we ask them in just a second.
You're on the table with chase a fad. I'm assuming you're going to go out of business pretty quick.
But I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No.
I was going to say, like, I guess maybe I'm kind of still more novice than you guys, but if I were in random city in Maine, there's no way I'm going to grab a beer that I've never heard of and spend 10 to 12 bucks on it.
No.
Just because I like the label.
I'm going to grab...
You know, if I know if it's...
That was a six pack.
So, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, like... If I'm going to go spend 12 bucks on beer, I'm going to go buy like a 15 to 18 pack of Miller Lite or Coors Light because I know what it's going to taste like, and I know I'm going to get my value for that $12. If I honestly were to drain pour a six pack like that, I would be more likely to like ship it in airmail and drop it on somebody's front porch.
You're right. That actually did happen. I was talking more towards if I was at a bar, like an airport bar.
It's still five bucks. I mean,
I agree. Or more if you're at an airport. I'm like, oh, let me grab that Sam Adams. I don't know what that amber tastes like. It might taste like crap, or I shouldn't say amber, whatever random flavored beer you have there. I'm not going to do it. Like, give me a Newcastle. I've been drinking this for 20 years. Like, I know what that's going to taste like these days. So, it's all right to make smaller batches of that, but you have to keep the staples. That's ridiculous if you get rid of that.
I agree.
Yeah.
What about you guys over there? I mean,
I think you have to keep your staples, and just it kind of goes back to the pumpkin thing. It's like, well, it's necessary, but you know, if I'm looking to.
That's the thing.
Build my brand.
Is it necessary?
I think it is. I think you, but I mean, I think you can get away without doing it. I've worked at breweries before where I was the pub brewer, and I said, no way, I'm not doing a pumpkin beer because you're going to sell one half barrel of it. So I focus more on the IPA, which was the flagship beer, to make sure that beer was right all the time. And I didn't give up a tank. So that I could brew a pumpkin beer and run out of IPA.
And I say, so you know you're going to sell the IPA.
And I think it goes...
Everything you make.
Right.
So it's constantly going to sell. As much as I'm not a big IPA fan, that is always going to sell. So that's a good example. Are you going to give that up to make whatever random BS pumpkin?
And I think it goes to the business of beer, which I guess we don't have that. But you got to... If Bell's wants to do an FMB, they'd be stupid to do it. Because... You know, they stretch themselves too thin. They've got certain things they're already working with. You know, let's, you know, keep what's going forward. But Sam Adams brings up Twisted Tea, which is essentially an FMB. But they're a big enough company that can move, you know, versatile enough to where they can produce that and Angry Orchard.
I mean,
and
think about it for a second.
Traveler Beer. And,
they are now.
Yeah.
But back when they were just doing the lager, they had to build their brand first so that they could actually make these other beers.
Exactly.
So they weren't doing.
You want to talk about a brewery that tested the limits in regards to beer styles, beer flavors, and mass produced to out. You know, you talk 10 years ago, Sam Adams was pretty much the only one where you're going to get the different varieties, the black lager, the.
Yeah, it wasn't always that way. It was always that flagship brand, and they.
Well, the Boston Lager was their home
so
run.
They built that, and they made enough money so that they could expand and start making these other beers. So they didn't have an IPA when they first started out.
No, I mean their Rebel IPA is only like 18 months, 2 years old.
Yeah, because they can now.
Yeah, exactly, and I guess that's the whole to what you're saying, Ken is. If you're going to chase the rabbit, you need to be nimble enough to where if you lose, you're not done.
You're not out of the race.
You can go find another rabbit, a slower rabbit maybe.
I mean, you look at AB really. I mean, they have the money to go say, all right, we're going to go throw up $3 million and compete in this category, and we're going to make Ritas. And Ken's going to drink him on the show and embarrass himself.
I drank one.
That happened one time.
It's still the most. That is still 8 ounces of shame that I will not let you live down.
You drank the whole thing?
Oh, yeah, it was delicious.
Oh, he totally did.
But I mean, it's
Bud Light La Merida.
I think it's a financial play. Like, it's good to chase the rabbit and be trendy when you can be the first one there. But when you're the second, third one, I mean, let's look what's going on with Root Beer right now.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah, that's a good example.
You know,
example.
Root beer came out and hit the market and flashed, but when was the last time anyone bought their ginger ale or their vanilla cream ale?
What was it,
or,
2 years ago, people were shitting themselves over Not My Father?
No, that was last summer.
That was last summer. People were like, oh, my God, I have to go get this at the grocery store. They have some.
I think it was all produced by Dennis. All the hype was produced by Dennis because it was all just straight sugar and cavities.
Sugar and cavities.
There you go. Yeah, that whole, you know, we don't talk about FMBs too much in regards to craze because that definitely is cyclical.
Yeah.
In regards to, you know, your root beer, then your Henry's hard soda, that hit and a lot of people were drinking it. And now it's kind of just sitting on shelves like, hey, what's going on? And you see it with other FMBs. What I don't see, though, is that there are a lot of other FMBs that we don't touch on because not too many people talk about it. And you're talking your mixtails from
mixtails have all been discontinued except one.
Really?
Yeah, only the Hurricane still continues.
Hey,
Hurricane.
The Firewalker was discontinued the week it was brought
some
to Michigan.
Kamikaze.
Actually, you know what? No, I'm sorry.
I had the Kamikaze. It's the Long Island.
It's the Long Island that stayed. The Hurricane and the Firewalker have already been discontinued.
Is that Hurricane High Gravity?
No, Hurricane was the New Orleans cocktail with like triple sec and rum and.
Yeah, I used to have a bunch of those when I was at Windsor, getting drunk at 19, drinking pitchers of Hurricane because drunk at 19.
Good time.
It was the best value for your Canadian dollar.
No, pretty much. Yeah, yeah. The watered down Hurricanes, and I'm drinking it, thinking I'm, you know, hot shit, and I'm like, man, I'm not drunk at all.
He's like, I'm the man, and I'm at Reactor where the annoying siren goes off every 2 seconds.
Those were back in the days of like, oh man, Pepper Bottoms used to have their own beer, and they used to brew their own beer, and it was so bad. Oh my God, I remember that. Those were the days. That was back in 2000. I'm trying to think of when I would have been 19, because that's when I would have been hanging out in Windsor drinking.
I just remember being the oldest person in the club at like a hot like 26.
So I was gonna say,
what am I doing?
Well, you're hanging out with University of Windsor students and Metro Detroit 19-year-olds.
It was like a high school like class reunion every Saturday.
Pretty much.
It was. It's really awkward.
One of those teen clubs when it's 18
Echo?
And up. Echo.
Lord.
18 and up for women, 21 and up for men. Oh, it was always 18. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. So I want to touch one more news thing and something I want to talk about in regards to issues that we've seen a lot of, and that's in regards to, quote unquote, infections and recalls. Now, in the business portion of it, I know you guys aren't in the business portion too much chemistry brewing. But how are you guys, are you guys being proactive in teaching about these major infection issues like Goose Island? Goose Island
situation is
a huge one. You're talking refunds,
Didn't we try one? The coffee one? It was bad. I don't mean to derail the conversition. That beer was bad.
We tried the coffee one. We didn't like it, but it wasn't infected. We just didn't like it.
I thought that was the one that tasted like apples. Are you sure?
I thought it was.
You know, go ahead.
Look at that. We actually got a response from Deschutes.
Oh.
It's 50% aged in wine barrels, and the other is not aged at all. So it's a blend of new and old barley wines.
Hmm. We'll have to make sure to we'll tweet them before we head out today when we post the original thing.
We'll tag them in our podcast.
Exactly. So how are you guys? You know, are you guys teaching about infections? That's the science thing of it. Yeah.
So we teach about that in two different places, in the beer styles and flavors course. Students get spiked beers and they do some defect, not just defect. They do other things that are in there. Other flavors that they can identify. But in the science class, I have them do very specific sensory evaluation of certain defects. But it's not just to say that tastes like green apples, so that's acetaldehyde. Once they identify it, they have to tell me the metabolic pathway that caused it, what condition in the brew process may have caused it, and how would you either fix it, mitigate it, or prevent it in the future. So what we do is we go through all the defects that are possible out there and chemically and biochemically how that happens. And then sometimes I'll drag in things like, now this might have happened over, you know, these newsy items with people having to pull this back. And this is how it hits home when you talk about this stuff and eyes roll back and they're wondering how the acetaldehyde got there from, you know, the alcohol dehydrogenase running backwards in a...
Are you speaking English right now?
Stuff. Yeah.
Okay. just in case somebody else thought you were...
But the point is... Yeah, so you guys went just like my students did. You're like, what? You know, oh, God, he's talking about this stuff again.
Like, I was totally on board until you're like, homework. I'm like, oh, and then, brain, shut off.
And then I can bring it and say, well, why do you need to know all this? Because I would bring up, you know, one of these news items about how much did that cost them, you know? Huh? Not just in money, but, you know, the reputation to the brand.
A return customer.
Who's going to go back?
Black Friday this year will be a very interesting thing to see online because a lot of people had the day off. A lot of people were truck chasing, and it's going to be interesting to see how different it'll be this year as opposed to last year with people. Are they going to be chasing? Are they going to be potentially, you know, looking for these beers? Or they're just going to be like, well, if I get it, I get it. If I don't, I don't. And I, you know, as much as that's pretty much my entire mantra in regards to beer, like, if I get it, great. If I don't, I'm not going to be too concerned about it because there's 100 other beers that I haven't had in this bar or beer store
exactly
that I can try. And, you know, for like 6 months, I was trying to get a lot of, like, the newer, cooler beers. Like, I still have all the Prairies, all the Bombs that we have. But we're going to take a quick break. We got segment 3 coming up, 5 questions with Matt Bush. So we're going to be right back with the Better on Draft podcast. And we are back with episode 51 of the Better on Draft podcast. Man, almost a year into this, and we are still going strong, struggling as always.
Of course.
Struggling as always. You know, with those thousands of people that visit our website every month, struggling. So I am Ken, one of your hosts. We still got Matt, Dan, and the gentleman from Schoolcraft. Tom, and Rich. Thank you for staying with us. So segment 3 always starts off with
get
5 questions
ready?
From
how do you not
Matt
have the music ready?
Bush.
He always forgets.
Us stalling and waiting is the it's really more of the opening music.
Well, I'm
than
totally expecting the music already to be.
Why are you totally expecting the music already?
Because we've already been doing this like 8 weeks. I'm assuming.
Has it been 8 weeks?
I think
already?
It's like 4 or 5.
Yeah, come on now. I think. Come on. Oh, there it is.
All right, let's bring that way down.
There you go.
All right, so Brewing Beer Edition of the 5 questions. Question number 1 starts thusly. Beer is said to have first been brewed in ancient Mesopotamia. Geography, what country currently makes up most of ancient Mesopotamia?
Iraq.
Hell yeah. I mean, okay. Yes.
What Dan said.
Yes, Iraq is the correct answer. Iraq. You can feel free to confer more with the team.
I knew the answer to that one.
All right. Question number 2. The German purity law. Reinheitsgebot. Spell it. Just kidding. No.
I was going to punch you. I was going to knock you out of your chair.
I can do that.
It's like a week 1 question.
No, I got yelled at. I got yelled at earlier for doing that. Okay. In what year was it enacted? Or what century?
What's
14th, 15th, or 16th century?
16th, 15, 16, Duke Wilhelm IV.
Oh, I'll go with that.
I'm going to go with Rich over there.
Two answers right off the bat.
Yeah, it was 15, 16. And if you want to spell right Reinheitsgebot, you can, but we'll say that.
Don't put an H in it.
Oh, no, you have to put an H in it.
No, you don't put an H in it.
R-E-I-H-E-I-T.
No, it doesn't have an H in it.
Okay, well, I did pour all of you fine gentlemen a beverage.
Moving along quick here.
Yeah, I know. We're going to have
to move to the beer.
We're going to have to go back to beer news.
Is there another question?
There are three more questions, right, actually.
We're probably going to go
yeah, there would be,
if these
there would
up.
Be no H in Ryan. I'm thinking about this. There would be no H in that. Why would
There's
you?
There's no H in it.
No.
Ryan Heights.
Some people do. Though.
Ryan Heights Kaput. I don't know.
Like, I'm all thinking right. of a Dutch side that has no H in it, so there's not one in
So, gentlemen, you have a beer in front of you. If you'd like to taste it, sample it, maybe talk about what you think it tastes like. Swish it around your palate.
Tastes like Cool Ranch Doritos.
That's probably the Cool Ranch Doritos you ate prior to
you got me.
Drinking your beer.
So we have to come up with a, so we, like we a have team two, question?
Yeah, like two questions. So like previous questions that we've asked, like does the word like does a word in the beer have five letters? Because we were trying to see if it was a light, L-I-G-H-T, or a Busch product. Oh. We had one question because he poured us fucking Four Loko one day.
We hit that right off the bat, though.
And I said, did this drink previously have caffeine in it?
Oh.
Because it was either going to be Four Loko or it was going to be like Steel Reserve flavors.
I thought maybe we should ask a question like, does this beer yeast have a mutation that produces 4-vinyl guaiacol?
It may. That's not an answer I might know. I was
maybe.
Not part of the team that brewed this beer. I was part of the team that went to the party store and bought this beer.
So, right. like, one time we asked, you know, is it considered a malt liquor as opposed to is it considered as some type of
lager? Are you asking me if this is a malt
liquor?
No,
I'm not asking. Okay. I'm just trying to help.
Deliberating.
No, we're not deliberating even. I'm trying to give examples of questions that we've asked. So this is
we're conferring at this point.
We're still listening to relaxing instrumental house music for studying 2015, by the way. So
it's like every beer I drank during the 90s and early 2000s.
Well, the best is still this tastes like City Club.
That and we were spot on when that came. That was a.
This is actually really crisp. I'm enjoying
that's
it.
That's why I'm like I've drank this plenty of times, but I can't pinpoint.
Like it doesn't taste anything light though, but it does taste watery.
I'm usually too drunk to remember what I drank. Based drank on the that. Taste.
What, like, what
based
are you guys thinking? You talk to Mike. Yeah,
I don't know. It's to me it. It's hard to tell, but it comes down to... I keep thinking it's a Saison.
You're thinking it's a... Now, see, I don't know if he would
the
buy
Saison's
a Saison. Saison's
coming in 24-ounce cans?
Oh, is that,
it'll
is
be that
one of the questions
of,
we can ask? That's a requirement?
I told you it's in the single-serve door.
It's in the single-serve door, so
if I'm
going to be
party
like...
store, I'm grabbing... Yeah, I'm
oh,
not
you mean
grabbing
like,
this.
What party so, store?
Oh, a party store.
If that's one of the questions.
That's not one of the questions. You know, come to
that
think about
give it.
Give
it away, though.
I don't think it would give it away. I think it would just be a waste of a question.
Yeah.
I definitely think it's some type of lager or pilsner, and I'm definitely thinking it's got to be something foreign.
I don't know. It tastes
like every other one.
No, it doesn't taste like.
You think it tastes like a Saison?
A Saison or.
Well, Saisons are foreign, right?
It's got some funkiness in it that.
Yeah, but what Saison do you find in a beer store?
What party store? Was it the Marathon Station?
On 8 Mile?
Yeah, we have to think it's going to be like, almost think of it like you're going to just random liquor store number 4, not random craft beer liquor
hold
store.
On, would a good question be then, is this an American company? And we're not talking keeping
Was this
bud.
Brewed?
Hold on. Okay, yeah, on. We're not trying to go on technicalities of Bud or Miller. This isn't South Africa.
I think the best question to ask first is, was this brewed in the United States?
No.
So I called it. It's a foreign beer. So we've got it's nothing Anheuser-Busch. Okay, it's nothing Miller Coors. So it's got to be Molson Labatt.
Heineken.
Ooh,
this doesn't have that
I was
going to
say,
Heineken.
It doesn't have the bite of Heineken. So I have a question, and we're going to pigeonhole ourselves no matter what. But I think the question should be, was it brewed in North America? Because
wait, we just asked that.
You
know,
we asked if it was brewed in the United States
I'll give you that as the first one, and no, this is not brewed on this continent.
Okay, there you go. I appreciate that. So obviously it's not Molson Labatt.
It's not Tecate or.
But any does this other. Actually taste? This doesn't taste anything like a Molson or Labatt.
It doesn't taste like a lager, and the head didn't.
I was going with Molson Ice because it was a little. Ice. Dude, you gave us Ice House Edge.
Yeah,
fuck
I know.
You.
So, but wait, this doesn't taste like an. You guys don't know what an ice beer tastes like.
Hold
anymore.
On. So where are we at then? We're talking Stella. Europe. I know we're talking Stella. We're talking Heineken. We're talking Grolsch. I don't think does Grolsch come in a can. I can see his freaking.
This is gonna. I'll be honest, Dan. This is gonna be your worst enemy. This is deceiving.
Their air fresheners just screwed me up all night.
The air freshener. We'll have to make sure to unplug those when we come in from now on.
I'm sure they're gonna want us to plug us in as they get out, as we get out, because we're smelly individuals.
I'm gonna have to burn this shirt. It smells like it. It smells like it.
That's a nice. I tell you what, those are nice little uniforms for. School crafts. I'm kind of a little jealous. I think we need to get those for Better on Draft. Get the little Better on Draft logo right up here. No.
Why are you touching? No. All right, let's figure out this.
Touching
beer.
Right up here.
So we know it's European. So we're kind of pigeonholing.
Is it European?
It could be Tsingtao. It could be Sapporo.
It's probably Japanese. Yeah.
Yeah, but.
So we have one question.
We got one more question. One guess. I know that's where I mean we do really well.
Hold on, was it brewed in Europe?
Well, no. Then we're stuck.
Then we're so South America and Asia. How many beers do you get here? Well,
it's either going to be
South America and Asia.
I mean, no matter what the question we ask, it's either going to be probably one of four European beers or one of two Asian beers.
So I'm saying if you eliminate Europe, it really lowers it down. Or it pigeonholes it into what I said, Stella. It's not like
Kind of grooving this music.
It's not Stella. It's not Heineken.
I'm feeling a stump coming on. I'm really feeling a stump.
I think we need to ask another continent question. I think we need to break it down to either. I mean, you thought it was a saison. It's not a saison. It's definitely some type of lager.
I don't know. That's
lager pills.
I thought it was Schlitz at first. Seriously.
Bull Ice for sure.
That's the thing. I honest to God think it's Sapporo.
Really? Then ask the Europe question because that'll eliminate most beers.
I don't know. It's got.
There's no South American or African beers he can buy in a single cooler here. Let alone,
that's the thing.
So
though,
that'll make it an Asian beer if we eliminate Europe.
All right, I'm going to ask it, and then we're just going to probably rock paper scissors no matter what.
Yeah.
Was this brewed in Europe?
Yes.
Fuck.
Well, that's.
I don't know. You guys should be talking because I stepped away from the microphone to drink my all day IPA.
A single door cooler. That's. So I'm saying it's Stella, it's Heineken, it's Grolsch. What else?
Have the bite of Heineken. It's too smooth to be Heineken.
What are your German beers you could buy in a single cooler?
So you bought it cold?
Bought it cold.
This is why I legitimately hate European beer, because they all taste like yellow bullshit. It's true. It's seriously true. They won't drop this bullshit.
Oh, God, that all-day IPA is delicious.
What? There's no English beer that is yellow and tastes like this. There's no Irish beer that's yellow. Hold on, is this a nitro IPA? It couldn't be.
No, that was god-awful.
Tasted like nothing. This kind of tastes like nothing.
I think I'm going to go along the lines. I'm going to go with Grolsch.
Could it really be Grolsch?
I really think. I don't think
I
it's Heineken.
I drink a lot of Grolsch, but I'm usually drunk when I drink it. In
Do you guys drink a lot of foreign?
I've drank a lot of Grolsch.
I make mine. I don't buy beer. I make it.
Yeah, see, they don't buy beer. They make it. They're true professionals.
True professionals.
Is Grolsch come in a can, though, here?
I don't think so. I've only seen it in the.
The flip-top bottles.
Yeah,
all I've
flip-top
ever seen
bottles, yep.
All they sell it in.
But is he saying that to try to throw us off his
scent?
No,
because I've never... Where are you finding a Grolsch can?
Well, the only thing I can think of if it's a can is Stella. The only English lager that I know that comes in a can is Stella.
Stella English or is it Dutch?
It's Belgian.
That's still in Europe, so it doesn't...
That's close enough? Can we win with that? Three countries away.
Okay. The only thing I can think of is Stella. Stella's got
to
be.
Technically, are 3 countries away. actually, 2. If you jump from America to England to the Netherlands, yeah, that's like 2 countries.
Wait, you got Iceland in there too. Don't.
That's way.
Don't get him started on Iceland. Don't get him started on Iceland.
We're gonna have a conversation offline where I want to set you straight from trying to talk shit.
All right. Let's go to I'm gonna say Stella. What do you think, Dan?
Yeah, it's either that. Yeah, I'm on Stella.
What do you guys think? Have you guys ever had Stella?
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys think it tastes like Stella? No. Well, obviously Rich doesn't because he thinks it's a Saison.
There's something funky in it. It's either the fruit fly that came out of that beer. That one is dead in there.
That's the protein we ate.
That's the protein. Added a little whey into it.
I don't know. It's the whole getting it out of the gas station cooler that's stumping me because it smells like a lot of things I've had, but nothing you get over at the Marathon station.
I think we're going to go with Stella, even though I think it's wrong.
And we have Hackershore.
I just had one of these over the weekend.
Berliner Weiss.
But I said it was a wheat beer, didn't I? Also, that whole thing about four vinyl
white. I never would have guessed.
That's in that. Way to go, Matt. This is what happens when you ask the chemist.
See, if we'd asked that question, we would have had that.
So wait, before we go to question four, I've got question 3.5. Hops is a plant, correct?
Yes.
So beer is salad, right?
Yeah. Beer is salad. It's grass. It's hops. Yeah, beer salad.
All right. Go to question four now.
So question number the grain.
All right. Question number four. This is more
croutons.
For the Schoolcraft folks. The actual terminology for the study of beer and beer making has a proper name.
Zymergy.
Zithology. But we'll go with that. Okay. So
really.
Zithology? Z-Y-T-H-O-L-O-G-Y.
Is that what's on the edge of this glass?
Probably.
Okay.
Probably. Zithology is a true beer connoisseur, a zithologist is a true beer connoisseur who can share many interesting facts about an immensely complex and sophisticated beverage, its ingredients, and the roles they play in brewing process.
I had the Z part right.
I also see it zithology from Anheuser-Busch, the website. I have to confirm my age, so I'm not going to go through.
All right, so question number five. This was my head scratcher for the day. Well, I guess not anymore. Beer has been proven for many medicinal purposes. So both, either, or neither is going to be the correct answer.
So it's
five.
A one of three.
No, one of four. Both, either, or neither.
Okay.
Beer is known to strengthen bones and or prevent kidney stones.
Both.
Does I say both.
Does beer?
I'm gonna go with a chemist.
Well, prevent.
So kidney bones.
Beers are the best things to drink after working.
Yeah,
out.
Bones are calcium phosphate. Yeah. I don't know what a kidney stone is made of.
Beer beer has been proven to strengthen bones and or prevent kidney stones. Yeah. Both, either, or neither.
It's a blood either thinner. Either. See, I want to say both. It's just my.
It's both.
I'm gonna go with them.
I'm just.
I trust them. Mm.
And prevent kidney stones.
And or.
Prevent, you said, or prevent? Or cause.
Prevent kidney stones?
Prevent kidney stones.
I'm trying to think what causes it.
I've never had a kidney stone.
And strengthen bones.
Thinking it prevents it.
It can strengthen bones in moderation.
Yeah, sure. So it's a great drink after lifting.
There's calcium in beer.
It really is.
Right, there's calcium in beer.
I thought it would cause kidney stones.
If you have calcium and phosphate together, that's when your body can use it. So,
but they're really breaking it down. I didn't expect this much.
So I think that one's right. I think we got, because get calcium, but calcium phosphate falls out in the mash, so you never get it because it's, sorry.
I'm listening to you guys. I'm back to being entranced. I need to start taking notes.
So they've got
grain and water.
They're guessing strengthening bones is correct.
Correct.
They haven't decided whether or not they believe kidney stones are prevented by beer or not.
I don't think they're prevented.
I don't think they're prevented either.
I think if anything, it causes it.
What would
I don't know what causes a kidney stone.
Kidneys?
Here's the thing that's making me not think it prevents kidney stones because a lot of people get kidney stones, I think, when they don't hydrate enough. So hydration has that other effect. Like Tom's been
pissing?
Going out of here every once in a while. Yeah.
Pissing. You can say pissing. Urinating.
Anyway.
Dehydrating.
That happens. The more you do that,
evacuating.
I think the less you have.
Evacuate.
I don't know. What do you think?
So we have either or do we have both? Because apparently you're not setting on neither. So it's either both or either on this point.
Oh, we can pronounce it either.
Either or either.
Okay. Either or either.
We'll go both.
All right.
All right, we're going both.
It is both. It is exactly urinating to help prevent kidney stones, but it's actually the silicon in beer that helps strengthen the bones.
Silicon.
So that those are your five questions that were very quick today, except for the name.
Except for the beer. Yeah, that stumped us. That was a good one.
Come on, the beer in question five. Question five, there's a little discussion.
They're all German questions, so I'm kind of surprised that you guys didn't get that it was a German beer.
Not even on my heart. Like, that's why I asked, what are the German beers you can...
Yeah.
I'm thinking
cans.
I
didn't even think of Hacker Shore.
I'm thinking of
single serve. I was thinking of Schlitz. I mean, I don't know.
And I thought there Blatz. Was... You could taste Ham's the clothes light. In it.
Blatz. So
it
where do you find Blatz at?
It wasn't a lager. I can still get it.
Is that the Goebbels?
I got some Goebbels. To be fair, I did get this at the same place that I got the Four Loko. So it is a legitimate story.
I didn't say it wasn't.
No, no, no. We're not saying anything otherwise. That I mean, obviously. Yeah, it was definitely a good one. That's for sure. You did get a stumper on us.
I'll take the moral victory on that.
The moral victory.
That's like winning by a hook on a gamble. Okay, it's my three and a half.
Hey,
the backdoor cover.
You know where you can gamble?
North Center Brewing Company?
No, well, Northville Downs, which is down the road from North Center Brewing Company.
I was
over
like,
in Northville, Michigan.
I was wondering
Greek
if they
Town Casino sponsors us now.
No, Greektown Casino does not sponsor us.
Casinos Windsor, we've been talking a lot about that place. Too.
Caesars.
Yeah,
we have gambled a lot there, yes.
Oh, yes, we have.
They do have a sports book.
They do, but you have to parlay everything.
And they have a ridiculous hook on everything.
Hey, I'll give you a great parlay for tomorrow. What? Michigan minus 18.5 and Michigan State minus 5. Take that to the window. If you're listening live or before noon tomorrow.
Before noon kickoff tomorrow.
Take that to the window. And if it doesn't cover, you can send me a small bill, but not an actual bill because I won't pay it. But if you win, I want a third of it.
A third, okay. Because
yeah, it's two
a third of the winnings or a third of the bet.
Better on gambling winnings. With Matt over here.
Because it's 2 point two. It's plus 260 or 2.6 to 1. So I mean that's still enough for them to have, and just a little thank you for Better on Draft. We're taking small sponsorships through my gambling habits.
Hey, you're not very good at gambling. And,
I'm actually very good
fan
at FanDuel. Oh, hey, I was second place last week.
I was first place the first week.
There we go.
And I'm better than you.
And you were like fourth place last week.
That was pretty bad last week.
Well, I got second last night in the MLB late night games? Is that what we're going to?
I had Gronk on my team last week.
Paid out pretty good.
Gronk didn't even play.
I know.
Did you not read the...
He was questionable, and then I didn't see that he was out.
LeGarrette Blount pulled out my Monday, Thursday.
Oh, yeah.
I posted that lineup. I was like, this somehow doubled up my money.
So Schoolcraft College, how can they apply? Can they apply mid-season, mid-semester, not mid-semester, but between fall
for the
and
unfortunate
winter.
Folks not living in Western Wayne County?
Well, they can go to GRCC, home of the
Catamounts. The Western Catamounts.
The regular winter registration is going to open at the end of October. Okay, so that's when you got to get in. The brewing program is filling up fast, especially the early courses, the brewing science and the brew house operations class and the beer styles and flavors class fill up and they get waitlisted. So, my advice would be if this is something you want to do, you're going to start with one of the 101, 110, or 120 courses in there, one of the ones that Tom teaches, I teach, or Annette May teaches. And that's where you really need to start. You need to make that decision so that you can get on there and register online around October 30th or 31st. I don't remember the exact date, but it's end of October.
Are you starting to see a lot of culinary students like stopping by for a class or two just to kind of...
We have a few now that have transitioned over. They've gotten a degree in culinary arts.
Doing both.
And
okay.
Now they're coming over. So, we have a baking and pastry certificate program there too. And we see the culinary arts students seeing this as you can leverage everything you learn in culinary arts in brewing because it's that balance of flavors and understanding what goes with what and how to match food. And hot food cooking and the ability to do a really good job of balancing flavors really go a long way for brewers. So, we're seeing a few coming over.
Most of the brewers I know are really good cooks. And I think...
Are you a really good cook?
I am.
Do you see it go the other way too? Do you think that most cooks are brewers are good brewers too, or is that mostly
or could
just
be good brewers? I guess you could say.
Is that more brewers are good cooks, but not all good cooks are brewers or would be good brewers?
I think it'd go both ways. I think that a chef could easily transition into the brewing world and create recipes once you've understood it. And I was a cook first, and now I'm becoming a better cook because I'm with the chefs every day, so I'm always asking those guys questions a lot.
Well, it's great to see the mix because obviously we don't have the business side between you two. We have the chemistry side, the how it's made. We have the before it's made, almost like how things work, and then we have the brewer who understands how things work, and he's the one that's able to, decipher between what he needs to add, subtract, do a little bit more to fix things. And that's definitely what you're looking for when you're, if I were to go into a school and I want to learn how to brew, as much as I want to learn the aspects of the physical step one, step two, step three, step four, you're teaching them, step 1.2, what happens when step one doesn't go the way you want it to. And you've been there in regards to big brewing. And I think that's what helps Schoolcraft a lot is the fact that you have, not only the smarts, but the history. Because you worked for NBC, you worked for Block, you worked for, I think there was one more you mentioned before we started going online.
Arcadia, I've been Arcadia.
Oh, okay, but, Arcadia. So you have that experience because, as much as science is science, cooking and stuff, cooking happens on set, on point, as you're doing it. You watch those shows, Top Chef, Hell's Kitchen, anything like that. They have their recipe, but the recipe doesn't always necessarily work.
No, recipes don't. So the point you're making is great. We can go through, in the science class especially, I have to continually tell people why this is relevant. I mean, I went through the Schoolcraft culinary program. I went through the brigade. I worked in the restaurant. I'd been a pastry chef. And so you bring those experiences to brewing, and then you can say, this is why the science is important. I mean, the culinary students have to go through a food chemistry class too. And there was some resistance to that when I came in a while ago. But the point is, when things go bad, you understand the science behind it. You understand how to fix it. You understand what went wrong. So you don't spend a lot of time not solving the problem. That's another thing I heard when I went out and talked to brewers. I said, what other skills do you need? They would say, I was told by somebody, problem solving, but you can't teach that. We do teach that. There's a method called Kepner-Trigot problem analysis. And so you teach folks how to solve problems. You give them the foundation and the knowledge and the science. You give them all the experience that they're getting hands-on in the three production classes we have. And you bring that together. And hopefully when somebody comes and knocks on your door and says, hey, you got an opening here, let me tell you what I can do, and I'm really great at being in this position where I'm going to learn. I mean, one of the things that we've been pushing, too, is professionalism. So we don't expect a bunch of cowboys to go out there and act like they know it all. You got the basics. Now you're going to go learn from your brewer.
And, that's the thing with the culinary arts and even chemistry itself is that it has to be hands-on. You can learn from a book and learn from a book and learn from a book, but the ability to adapt, adjust, and go forward is such a task to where you have to think on your feet. You have to be able to have that improv. I'll just say improv because I'm trying to say the full word. It ain't
improvisational
working. Thank you.
Abilities.
Thank you. Having that skill is a necessity in regards to the world that you're in within brewery, because if you don't have that, you just wasted a lot of money, a lot of time, and a lot of beer. And, I do appreciate you guys coming on out. You guys can be found at schoolcraft.edu. Also, Dan, just so you know, GRCC, home of the Raiders.
That wasn't me. Oh,
Grand Rapids Community College, well, just so you know.
What was he talking
Virginia
about?
He was talking about the Catamounts over in Vermont.
Virginia.
Virginia Cavaliers. I knew that one. So that's going to do it for us here at the Better on Draft podcast. Rich, Tom, thank you guys for showing up. Thanks. Go check them out, schoolcraft.edu.
And their new brew pub.
And their new brew pub soon over at 7 in Hagerty, Daniel.
It's between them.
We're
on the north side. It's easier.
It's terrible. Just having a little fun.
Yeah.
Don't forget to check out North Center Brewing as well as Zatuna Liquor. And no matter what you think of your beer, we think it's better on draft.
Better on draft.
Have a good night.